This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I am glad to be back with my co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
Doing good. Doing better than our former acting Secretary of Defense.
Oh, he got the boot, didn't he?
Well, he resigned.
Did he resign?
Just before we started recording.
Yeah, apparently he needs family time. It's interesting how this comes up over and over again with these people who have the incredible busy careers. They start working for Trump and all of a sudden they're like, I miss my family.
Oh, did you read that article?
Which one?
The one that came out about why he had to resign just like a half hour ago.
Is that the domestic violence allegations? Is that what we're talking about?
That was yesterday. There was another story today that was brutal. I just read through it.
Tell us about it. Tell us about it, Susan. I did not see it.
You know, I'm not even sure it's entirely... Well, okay, it is relevant because this is the guy they were hoping to get confirmed as Secretary of Defense. But the whole story, even aside from politics, was just like an awful read of a dysfunctional family. And, I mean, in short, there was an alleged domestic violence incident.
Where they both hit each other, right? Him and his wife.
Although, from description, it seems very likely that he was, in fact, the victim of the altercation.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, but that's not the one that was so shocking, explains why he had to resign. I don't know how it took this long to come out. I mean, on the one hand, I feel like there is I don't want to say it's not relevant, but it's such a deeply personal and, like, kind of distant issue that... Oh, anyway, what happened basically is that his son back in like 2013, 2010, maybe, 17-year-old son, got in an argument with his mother because he was seeing a 36-year-old woman and she didn't like it.
Oh, God.
And he took a baseball bat to her and broke her skull.
To his mother?
His mom,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, that's awful.
And then he, Shanahan, the former acting Secretary of Defense, he was living across the country. Flew in, this happened at night, he flew in, helped his son, he took a cell phone with him so the police couldn't track his son with that, got a hotel room with him, and negotiated a surrender to police a few days later, and then wrote a paper that basically justified his son taking a bat to his mom, calling it self-defense.
What do you mean, wrote a paper?
Well, he wrote, like, a memo for use of, like, you know, for defense, basically.
Defense, basically?
Yeah. Which, you know, like, it looks awful, but, like... his actions were extremely, it's hard to judge a parent in that circumstance. He did lawyer up, which is a smart thing to do. He negotiated a surrender. He took longer than he needed to necessarily, but, like, I'm not going to put fault in him for that. And I can see why in the moment, if your son is facing time, will go to prison basically for something like this, why your instinct would be to write notes down that could potentially be mitigation.
I mean, okay, was the memo like a self-defense type of thing? I mean, what was the justification?
It was arguing self-defense that his mother had been harassing. I mean, obviously it's a bullshit argument.
Oh, she's nagging him. So you can take him. Okay, so I have kids.
I think it's more like pursuing him and like wouldn't let him like be alone or something.
Nah.
I mean, obviously it's a bullshit claim, but nah. I don't necessarily, there's people like jumping onto him for even writing it. And like, yeah, the arguments are crazy. But the fact that he wrote that in the moment, to me, it's not a takeaway from the story, like some were making it out to be.
Well, it could be that his resignation is to further protect his son and family and stuff, I'm assuming, so people don't go digging. But now that's come out, I mean, it's kind of too late on that front. But I will say, as a parent, God forbid one of my kids takes a baseball bat to anybody, I will pick up the phone and call the police myself. I mean, that something is... Like something, you know, that's not a normal reaction to any kind of a parent-child argument. It just isn't. And it's something...
It is not, but it is worth noting that the mother has engaged in abusive conduct towards all of her children who were removed from her custody. So it basically
physically
is
abusive?
Extremely messy.
Oh.
Yeah.
The whole thing's a mess. Okay, and then the kids are just screwed up. But anyway. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, the point being, all that was, it was an awful, brutal read. But it doesn't matter because you're like, wait, how's this guy been acting Secretary of Defense for 6 months and this has not come up? Mm. Did the White House really think he was going to like skate through the confirmation process? Like, what was their game plan here?
Yes, they did.
Did they always intend to never really confirm him?
Remember Kavanaugh? Are you kidding me? The White House doesn't care. I'm sure even if Trump was apprised of this.
They really, really wanted Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Trump likes his acting secretaries, though. I don't think for he Trump does. It's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's like a good thing for in his mind that he does not have Senate confirmed positions.
Oh,
he
yeah.
has people who are acting. It can be removed easier and changed out at will.
It's so much easier. It's so much easier. Right now we have, let me count how many. We have an acting defense secretary. Now he's been, Shanahan's been replaced with Mark Esper. We have an acting DHS secretary, acting UN ambassador, acting SBA administrator, acting chief of staff, acting FEMA director, acting ICE director, acting USCIS director, acting FFA administrator. It's, you know, I think this, it works for him. Why would he put up with a whole process where he doesn't need to? He can just bypass all of it and just plug in whoever he wants, whenever he wants.
So what's more mystifying to me is why the Senate would gladly give up its own power in this regard. And they are. Republicans in the Senate are giving up one of their constitutional powers, which is, you know, to confirm the president's nominees, by simply allowing him to have acting personnel.
Because he's their man. He's their man. But, you know, this is a playbook.
They could still, he can still be their man, and they can still insist on their powers being powers.
Yeah, they have not exercised any of their powers, Susan. That's the whole point. They're just, but the thing is, what Trump is doing is, you know, he is enacting the authoritarian's playbook, but it doesn't, there's no reason then a Democratic president can't step in and do the exact same thing. And then they will have hissy fits over it, but he can do this whole same thing, is plug the entire upper echelons of government full of his, you know, handpicked folks without any confirmation. Anyway, well, Shanahan is...
Well, now it's worth pointing out too that Shanahan was a former lobbyist for Boeing, mm-hmm. has now been replaced by a lobbyist for Raytheon.
Yeah. But, okay, Mark Esper was already served as a U.S. Secretary of the Army. And he is a veteran. And so, but it's true up until now. I mean, since then, he's VP of Government Relations at Raytheon. He is a lifelong conservative. He was, I think, on the board, at the board of the Heritage think tank. So, yeah, I mean, now he's the acting Secretary of Defense. And Shanahan's not the only one who dipped out this week. We lost our girl. We lost Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
We didn't lose her. We still know where she is, unfortunately.
Is she gone? Gone? I mean, I kept
she's
hearing.
She's not gone yet. She'll be gone into the month. She's going back to Arkansas.
No, she's not quite gone. She's going back to Arkansas. She's saying, you know, she needs to be a mommy and it's an important job. But, you know,
prepare for a governor run.
No, she's not.
Yeah?
No, she's not. Is she really?
Possibly. Yeah, okay. Well, that's one of the plans. Like, that wasn't talks. She's not committed to anything. That's definitely something they were.
That makes sense. Discussing. Makes sense. Legacy position. Well, I mean, you know, she gave her little farewells with a lot of love and admiration for the president. You know, she's going out like a champ. And I don't know how long it'll last. You know, there's almost always just a matter of time before he starts humiliating his former employees, sometimes current employees. By the way, speaking of which, did you see the clip of him yelling at, who did he yell at for coughing during the Stephanopoulos interview?
His acting chief of staff.
Who is that, Mulvaney?
Mulvaney. He was.
Oh,
I think so.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was, I couldn't believe it.
God pity the soul of the staffer that makes him take a second take.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Let's insert the audio. Let's take a listen to this.
At some point, I hope they get it because it's a fantastic financial statement. It's a fantastic financial statement. And let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that, you know?
Your chief of staff.
If you're going to cough, please leave the room.
Get a shot of, and I'll come over here.
You just can't.
Just to change the shot.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, do you want to do that a little differently then?
Yeah, or? We just changed the angle.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
So at some point...
Oh, okay, so that makes sense. If she's gearing, if Huckabee Sanders is gearing up for a different, for a political career, then this makes sense. So does he have an acting spokesperson right now?
He does not. Well, she's still there until the end of the month. Last week with Waj, we were speculating if he'd even try and replace the press secretary, given that, I mean, there hasn't been a press briefing in months now, and there's not going to be them.
There's like dust on the tables.
Yeah.
There's like dust.
So,
in the room.
I mean, it's possible he won't try and replace the position. Like chief of staff, it's not like a Senate confirmed position. So, he isn't acting chief of staff is a ridiculous title in the first place. But he doesn't have to have a press secretary. He could choose not to. Although I saw that this week, there was speculation that he might take a Melania aide and make her the press secretary, which would, you know, it'd be a figurehead.
Oh, an aide of Melania. I thought you're Melania herself.
No, no, no,
I'm like,
no.
Wait, what? Okay, well, Let's see. Let's see. I'm sure there aren't a lot of people vying for this position.
It'll be a figurehead job, whoever gets it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Susan. So the last time we talked about Stitch Fix, you were getting ready or you wanted to get a new box. Did you do that?
I did, actually.
Oh, exciting. Tell me about it. What was it in?
So I went kind of boring because I needed some more work clothes for the summer.
Work clothes for the summer should not be a sentence, okay?
Well, I want clothes I can wear for work that are not going to be a million freaking degrees, because it's a million freaking degrees in DC right now. So I need more work clothes, but I was like, hey, give me something that's at least cute and light and, like, yes, appropriate for work, but not, like, normal, boring work clothes.
Right.
And Stitch Fix was amazing. I got these amazing, like, bright pink and blue outfits that I have not gotten to wear yet, but I'm really excited to, that are, like, the skirt I love, like, it's like a bright blue polka dotted but professional looking.
Ooh, that sounds cute.
Nice and airy. It's perfect.
Is it like a straight skirt or is it like a flowy skirt?
Yeah. It's like A-line? Is that
A-line? Oh, A-line's nice. Okay.
I could have made that up. It's a cute skirt, though.
No, that's totally a thing. That's totally a thing.
So, yeah, no, this one, I'm really excited. That was a great. My stylist, whoever she is, did a fabulous job.
Good job, stylist. Well, here's the thing. Look, when it comes to shopping for clothing, most of us are amateurs. I mean, I can barely dress myself. In fact, I'm just wearing yoga pants right now. So when I leave the house, I gotta try to look better. So do you. And that's why Stitch Fix is so handy. They're an online personal styling service. They deliver your favorite clothing, shoes, accessories right to your door, which is another plus because I actually hate going shopping. I like doing it online.
Yeah. This way, you can get great new clothes that are chosen to work together and with your existing wardrobe, and it's all done for you. It's amazing. And there's no subscription required. You pick between automatic shipments or only get new pieces when you want them. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. Plus, the $20 styling fee is automatically applied towards anything you keep from your box.
And by the way, they have men's and kids' boxes, too.
They do.
Exciting.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
They do. If you have a man in your life who is hard to convince
who
to go
needs
shopping,
help.
Yeah, who is not going? No, I'm talking generically. I'm not talking about anyone in my own life right now.
Nobody yes, named Irfan in my life. Yes, right,
Christy. If you're listening, I'm talking about you.
Exactly.
Stitch Fix is definitely the way to go for that.
Well, get started today at stitchfix.com/45th, and you guys can get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. So check it out. That's stitchfix.com/45th.
Stitchfix.com/45th.
In other news, God, Trump got some great news from his buddy Netanyahu. I think it was yesterday, the day before, that whole ceremony for him. They have now inaugurated Trump Heights. A neighborhood or town or something in Golan Heights has now been named in honor of the U.S. president. They did a whole speech and Netanyahu got up there and was like, you know, this is my dear friend. And it's now called Trump Heights. Apparently, it's just kind of like by resolution, and even though it's all, I mean, it seems largely symbolic because right now that they can't actually establish a new settlement. There's no money that's been earmarked for it. It's kind of just a political move by Netanyahu, and I'm not quite sure why.
Probably because he's having bad news on the home front, and he was trying to distract from it. His wife was admitting, I believe, that was the same day, was admitting that they misused public funds, state funds.
State funds, yeah. But the charges are corruption, basically.
And against both of them, yeah.
Against both of them. But don't, you know, that does not stop anybody nowadays from running as head of state. So what's going on with Iran, by the way? Some stuff seems to be backfiring on the Iran front.
I mean, so we ended last week's episode just basically hoping we didn't have to talk about Iran next week. And luckily, we don't have to talk about them yet. There's been nothing extremely, like, we're definitely going to war. I like the streak. I want the streak to continue. We'll see how long it can last with Bolton there.
Didn't Iran just say, basically, we're not going to hold ourselves to this treaty that you basically ripped up anyways? And now Trump is like, wait a minute, you guys have to abide by that treaty. Isn't that what's just happening?
That did happen, yes. Trump pulled out of a treaty, and then he's, like, blaming Iran for not being part of the treaty anymore when he ended it himself.
Right.
They're definitely, I mean, but that's the scary part, is it's so transparent, their interest in starting a war here, trying to do a regime change. They obviously don't have standing to do it yet, but to watch it in real time is extremely stressful as they take their steps towards making it happen. And those, like, even if no one actually makes an affirmative choice to go to war with Iran, these steps they're taking can add up to an event that gets out of everyone's control. Like, this is the fact that no one is going to actually pull the trigger and say, yes, we're going to go to war, doesn't mean it's not going to happen anyway.
Did the attack on the Saudi tanker happen after you and Waj recorded last week?
We discussed that. Yeah, it was a Japanese tanker.
Oh, I thought it was a Saudi tanker. Okay, maybe that was a previous one. There seems to actually be some intelligence behind it, which I was kind of shocked because why Iran? Like, I mean, like, given what's happening right now, given the mood in the White House, you'd think Iran would be a little more like not wanting to do stuff like that. Not wanting to trigger a war. But Iran, what's his name? I do believe, and I think it was Hassan Rouhani, who is president of Iran, or it might have been another senior official the other day in a public statement said, Iran does not want war. Iran will not go to war. Iran is not going to fight a war. So
what we have right now is like the claims from Pompeo that this was an Iranian military force that, one, put the mines on the ships, and two, was seen in a shaky video they released, removing one that did not go off. We know that at least one, I think, or possibly two allies have said that they stand behind the U.S. on this and they believe the intel. But then we have Japan, who was actually in Iran meeting with the Iranian president at the time as well, went down. And he said that, or not he, but the Japanese sources went on the record saying that, no, it wasn't like a mine that was planted in the ship that went off. Something was actually launched at the ship in the air, which would be totally contrary to what, yeah.
Then what is that video footage of?
Well, I mean, depends on who you ask, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, Iran really could have done this. Like, that's not in dispute. It could be them. That's scary. But the terrifying part, even more so than that, is that the world has to question whether it's going to trust the U.S.
Yeah.
on something like this. I mean, it always probably always did, but even more so now. Like, something that should not have been political or questionable, like, they have to consider whether this is all, you know, it's some other government power that is staging an incident that will look like Iranian forces are doing it.
Right, right. Well,
fill in the blank, Saudi Arabia.
You know, here's the thing. Given the news about the U.S. Cyber attacks in Russia and the administration's denial of it, I don't fault anybody in the world for not believing, because we can't even get on the same page in this country. I think this is one of the crazy stories that's come out this past week, is the story where the New York Times reported that American intelligence is increasing cyber attacks inside Russia. I don't know if it's like in retaliation or what, but Trump is repeatedly and publicly saying it's not true. And then there are sources from the New York Times that are saying, well, off the record, senior officials, you know, in intelligence have told us they're just not briefing the president on it. They don't want him to know that they're doing it. And so Trump is now asking the Times, or demanding from the Times on Twitter, of course, to tell him who the sources are. It's crazy.
So the story from the New York Times is, it, like what you just said, it shows that we have beefed up extensively our cyber attacks inside of Russia itself, which is interesting by itself, but the reaction from Trump has been bizarre. He seems to have not known for real, and that was on purpose, because obviously he would have, well, not obviously the president would object to
not allow it
taken against Russia. Right. Yeah, well, you know, that's a concern apparently they felt too, because they didn't tell him about it. So he is now, I mean, but the thing is, he's president. So now that he knows about it from the New York Times, he could easily like ask anyone standing around him, like, hey, was that right? And they'd be like, yes, sir, it is right. That's actually what we're doing. And instead, he's going on Twitter and demanding sources from them. Now, he knows it's a real story. He asked people around him. If he asked them and they told him it wasn't real, I mean, would he believe him? But he'd say that. He's asking for sources instead, which means he knows it's a real story. Mm. But it goes back to like that quote from him about Kim Jong-un and how the CIA turned his half-brother into an asset before he was murdered by Kim Jong-un. And Trump's like, oh, that would never happen under my watch. Which team are you playing on here, buddy? He's opposed to us spying on North Korean leaders. He's opposed to us taking action against a foreign hostile power that took action against us.
Right.
And this is just like an open thing. Everyone's acknowledging and treating as like, you know, that's just how it is now. The president is against us taking action against our enemies.
Well, I mean, like he certainly can just ask the question and it would be verified for him. But what he's telling his base is that it's not true. And what he's telling Russia is it's not true. I mean, like, who are these tweets for? There were two different tweets. Who's the audience? Is it Putin? Is it, I mean, like, who is he trying to say, nope, not true, ignore it, we are not cyber attacking your power grid or anything like that. I mean, he literally says that this story by the New York Times is a virtual act of treason. Those are the words he uses, which is crazy, crazy.
So there's two possible interpretations. One is that it could be Trump was offended primarily by the implication that he wasn't being briefed by his own people. Mm-hmm. And that set him off, which would set him off. That would be something that has historically pissed him off mm-hmm. and caused a reaction. Mm-hmm. But the less generous interpretation, or not less generous, the more obvious interpretation is that, yeah, he does not want Russia to think that he was behind it. Mm. Not so much that it's not happening, but he wants Russia to believe that he did not know. I mean, it's basically just like how Kim Jong-un and Putin reacted when they were asked about their actions with the U.S. You know, they strongly denied it. Right. I believed him. I asked him, they said no, so I believed him.
Right. And he can't just come, he won't come out and just say, well, I didn't know. You know, they didn't tell me, because that just makes him look like an idiot, which he is.
He's strongly denying it.
Strongly denying it, actually.
Just like Russian election interference, he is strongly denying American cyber attack interference in Russia.
Well, I mean, whatever's happening there, you know, if there are official sources that are reporting it to the extent that New York Times could vet it and then publish it, it seems like it's really happening. I kind of wonder about that separately, as, you know, kind of like looking at that by itself. It's like, is that a smart thing to do, to attack Russia's power grid? Like, what are we like getting?
They're attacking ours. So they've been infiltrating ours for like years now.
The power grid?
So yeah, there's definitely, the U.S. power grid. So yeah, this is definitely.
This is going to end well.
It's not defensive, but it's responsive.
This is going to end very badly, Susan.
Oh, this is going to end amazingly. This is going to end just great.
But here's the thing.
Like, how could this not?
None of us will have like power for our phones, so we can't even tweet about it whenever it ends. We'll just be sitting in the dark.
That's the real apocalypse. The real apocalypse is the world ends. You can't even tweet about it.
Can't even fucking tweet about it. All right. Let's talk about a little more international news. And that is, apparently we're in the middle of a currency war. At least Trump thinks so. So he tweeted something kind of cryptic to me. I didn't know what was going on. I haven't been following him for a few days. It's been a busy...
You don't know who Mario D is?
Mario D. I thought he was like a race car driver or something. I'm like, who's Mario? Who's Mario Draghi?
Wait, really?
I mean, it sounds to me like that kind of a name.
It does sound like a race car.
An Italian race car driver. I'm like, ooh, sexy. Why is he pissing off Trump? So yeah, apparently somebody named Mario Draghi. And who is he now? He is the head what's his position? I know he's the Euro Lord. Well, let me look at him. I can't remember his name.
The Euro Lord? We're going to call him the Euro Lord.
He's a Euro Lord. Hold on a second. I looked up his title and I can't remember it.
He's the Euro Lord.
The president of the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi. Draghi, am I saying that right? I'm not, but
it's
I don't
Mario
care.
D, Euro Lord.
Mario D, Euro Lord. Okay, so he announced the other day, it wasn't even an announcement. I think he was just kind of like saying, maybe we'll do this, maybe we'll do this. The economy's kind of flagging in Europe. He's like, maybe we'll print more currency, or maybe we'll lower interest rates. You know, I mean, he's doing what countries and coalitions, I mean, that's what people do to try to figure out how to, like, you know, boost their economy, bolster the economy, and Trump got really upset about it. Trump starts tweeting about it this morning. I think it's today the first time he tweeted about it, because it's the first time I saw it.
It's the first time he's tweeted about, like, he's actually named Mario D. Mm. And it's not even so much he's attacking what the EU is doing. He is continuing his bid to have the Fed cut rates in the U.S. as well.
Right.
Now, all of this, like, all these rate cuttings going on, that's not a sign of economic strength. That's a sign that the economy is cooling, and there's concern in various regions of the world that they're about to switch from a growing economy to a recession, or at least their fear it's on the horizon. And this is an effort to stay that off. So this is not like a sign of strength in the economy necessarily. But Trump is upset that the U.S. Fed has not and will not cut rates here, and that they've raised it a few times over the past couple of years. So
yeah,
more than being mad at the EU, I think he just sees this another negotiating point for him to
get that rate cut,
convince Jerome Powell to get a cut. Now, there's another article that just came out about supposedly the White House was looking for a way to, like, either replace or demote Powell, which is not something he can do. So he's basically, the Fed is like semi-independent. It can only be removed, the head of it can only be removed for cause. And he appointed Powell himself. He replaced Janet Yellen. But theoretically, he could, like, demote Jerome Powell for cause. And that's what the White House has been weighing. Basically, the goal would be to get him out, get a new nominee in place and confirmed, and have the new nominee cut the rates to a place that will artificially stimulate the economy long enough to get him through the election.
Yeah, temporarily.
It all explodes in a giant mess. Like, that's the whole goal. Right now, Trump's economy is premised on him keeping this, you know, raggedy ship tied together with, like, duct tape to get across the finish line of November 2019. That's it. After that, it will explode, if not before. He just wants to make sure it happens after.
So speaking of his eyes on 2020, you know, he's launching his 2020 campaign tonight from Orlando.
Yes.
Apparently, he said like 100,000 people are trying to get into the Amway Center. I have no idea. But yeah, there is footage of people waiting like dozens of hours trying to get in to see Trump tonight. He's got a, yeah, it's going to be wild tonight. And I have a feeling because of what he said in the last week, because, you know, he had, didn't he just say a couple days ago, my supporters might want me to stay more than two terms?
Yeah, he's been tweeting that a lot lately. Like, every couple of weeks he'll have another tweet about how, like, oh, I guess I'll have to stay on for a third term.
I bet.
It could be him trolling, but the problem is it doesn't matter if it's him trolling or not. It's unacceptable.
No, he's planting seeds. He is thinking of every which way possible. Again, he's done the angle of, well, they took 2 years of my presidency investigating me, so I should get those 2 years back. I should get like a presidential extension. I don't even know. But I can virtually guarantee he is somehow going to bring it up tonight. He's going to keep floating this idea until his base is like, yeah, why can't we do this? Sure, we can do this. Why can't we have more than two terms in this country? It's bullshit. And you know, not a single person in the GOP has said a word about it. They're just like, eh. You know.
Because he's just trolling. That's his MO. You can pretend that his words don't mean what they mean. Because often they don't. So, I mean, yeah, I agree. This is not like kid. He's kidding, not kidding. I think he obviously would play it off as a joke if he was challenged on it, which he's not going to be. Not by the GOP. But yeah. You know what? I'll take that bet, Rabia. I think I'll probably lose it. But I'm hoping
he'll bring it up tonight.
He'll
bring it up tonight.
I'll take the bet and then probably lose.
Well, you won the bet about the border not being closed with Mexico. So good on you for that. speaking of which, so let's talk a little bit about, we keep getting all this news through tweets, is he tweeted, I think yesterday, that next week ICE will begin the process of removing millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the U.S. They'll be removed as fast as they come in. Mexico, using their strong immigration laws, and yeah, apparently there's a new but not new agreement with Mexico, is doing a very good
job. There was no agreement. That was a fake thing. Yeah.
It was a fake piece of paper. It's doing a very good job of stopping people long before they get to our southern border. Guatemala is getting ready to sign a safe third country agreement. And the only ones who won't do anything are the Democrats in Congress. So he's saying next week something's going to happen where ICE will, I mean.
But is he? Yeah, that's the thing. Now this is when he's actually giving things, phrases, orders, and what's going to happen next? I mean, obviously they are not going to deport. Well, I say obviously, the idea that ICE can suddenly deport millions of people—well,
they can't. Logistically, they can't. Yeah,
they can't. They can't. Okay, yeah. This is obviously that is actually logistically impossible.
Right,
it will not happen. Yeah. So what will happen? Nothing. Something. I mean, he'll say something happened either way, but is it actually going to be a change in policy, or is this just all more rhetoric?
That I don't know. I mean, like, the way he has a phrase is ICE will begin the process of removing the millions of, you know, that could be a process that he's going to be like, oh, yeah, it's a 2-year-long process, whatever. But what he is saying is that they will be removed as fast as they come in. I don't know if he's trying to say that we're just going to start turning people away from the border. There was also last week some proposal that was floated about holding asylum. Somebody in Congress, I don't know, somebody said something about holding asylum hearings right at the border, which is totally not how you can do an asylum hearing at all. So I don't know what they're planning, but it seems like they're going to come up with some kind of expedited process to just turn folks around right then and there. But let's see.
Yeah, this one does seem like it's more than just him announcing something and it'll be ignored. I mean, there's lots of times in this administration where he gives orders that everyone's just like, well, let's pretend he didn't say that. It's better for everyone. This one's more specific, and it seems like some kind of action's coming down the pipeline. Yeah. But for such a bold statement, it's pretty devoid on any kind of implementation at the moment.
Well, I want to find out more about this Safe Third Nation agreement. You know, Safe Third Nations are generally designated during asylum proceedings. So if an asylee, an applicant says, well, if I go back to my country, I'm going to be killed, a judge might say, is there a safe third nation that you would prefer to be removed to? And then they can name one. I don't know what this is. I mean, that's like an individual basis. That's not like a flat, it's not like an agreement between countries that you're just going to be a safe third nation for all asylum applicants.
It is an agreement. Canada and the U.S. has one. And that's something that this administration has wanted with Mexico for a long time. Mexico does not want it and is not going to give it. That's pretty much their hard line that Trump's been trying to negotiate them down from and has not worked at all. So what seems to be happening is that there's that piece of paper I'm talking about, the one he waved about in the air during, a gaggle or something. It kind of showed that Trump has lost that negotiation point because the Mexican position is they want to have sort of a UN-backed refugee pact, a more cooperative, multi-country involvement sort of thing, not say third country. And the piece of paper he's waving about was like an agreement to try and agree later on how to implement such a refugee pact. So the third say third country stuff seems to be off the table with Mexico. So now he's trying to say that somehow on the table with Guatemala.
Yeah. Well, okay, but just to clarify, let me make the distinction between what I'm trying to say and what you're trying to say, and they're both actually true. The United States does have agreements with certain countries that people who apply for asylum status in that country, if they cannot be removed, that they would, these other nations would agree to then hear their cases or take them, at least for a temporary processing. But that doesn't mean that everybody who enters a country is going to be asking to be moved there. Like, you know, when the applicant is actually asked by the immigration judge, are you designating, like, are you, give me a country that you would prefer to be removed to. So that's a different designation. So even if Guatemala said, okay, we'll sign this treaty and we agree to take anybody who wants to come back, I don't think many of these applicants are going to be like, I escaped, you know, El Salvador, send me to Guatemala. I mean, that's just not going to happen. Like, you've got people coming in from there. I also don't know exactly what's going on with the UN refugee stuff, but if they're going to start addressing the issue of all these immigrants coming to the United States as a refugee issue versus an asylum issue, it's a whole different ball game then. And let's see if that happens. Because those are two different statuses and two different processes. So this morning, my 10-year-old, before we headed out and I dropped her off to hang out with some summer camp friends, it was her job to clean out the kitty litter. And so she's cleaning it out and she's like, "Mama, I think we have a problem."
Uh-oh.
I said, "What?" She's like, the litter has turned color.
Uh-oh.
Now, the only reason we can do this is because we have pretty litter. And you know what I'm talking about, Susan.
Yeah, but what color did it turn? Don't leave me hanging.
Well, here's the thing. So it was just like a light blue, actually. So, and we picked up the bag. And this is the thing about pretty litter. It's one of the reasons I love using it. I've been using it for over a year now. It has a little spectrum of colors on the back of the bag. And I said, "All right, sweetie, stand with me and show me where the color is and if we should be concerned." Turns out we're good. But what's great is that she knows to keep an eye on it. And if it turns red, we're in trouble.
Wait, what does light blue pee litter mean?
It just is like in the normal range. We're fine. We're good.
Okay.
We're good. So my cats are fine for now, other than just being assholes. But other than that,
pretty litter cannot fix that part of it. Pretty litter's amazing, but not that amazing.
Yeah, that's part of the charm. And then, you know, she cleaned up the litter and I went ahead and I changed out the whole litter box. And I used to make my husband do it because I don't like lugging big, heavy boxes of litter, and I just can't. I don't want to. But pretty litter comes in these nice little, easy to pick up, lightweight bags. The litter is lightweight. I don't know what the stuff is made of, but it's miraculous.
Yeah, it not only does it save your cat's life, it's really convenient too. So it's amazing. And unlike other conventional litters that contain ingredients and additives that may be damaging your cat's health, pretty litter is formed from naturally occurring minerals, and it's safe for your cat and virtually dust-free. Even better.
That's right. Yeah, there isn't a lot of dust. Not only that, there isn't any odor. Like, by the way, my litter box is right next to my washer and dryer, like literally right next to it. And the last thing I want to be smelling, I love the smell of fresh, clean laundry. I don't want to be interrupted by cat pee smells. And it doesn't happen now with Pretty Litter.
So do what we did and make the switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code 45th for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. So Manafort, his trials federally under special counsel's office are done, resolved. He's got a sentence. I think there was some post-conviction stuff going on, but that's been largely over with. After that happened, New York State decided to get in the game. perhaps, well, definitely as a backup option in case Manafort were to be pardoned, by filing their own charges against Manafort. I think there were 16 charges, largely similar, but theoretically not overlapping with the federal charges based on residential mortgage fraud, that sort of thing. So next week, he's going to be arraigned in New York on those charges. And as part of that, he is transferred from federal custody over to New York State. So that's where last week we had news that Manafort would be in Rikers came out. And Robbie, I don't know if you saw it, but like there for me, it was really on Twitter that day. There was all those people who were cheering it. And it was kind of sickening to see that they were all, I don't know, just the overwhelming enthusiasm.
That's weird because I actually saw most of the people I follow were like, nobody should be held in solitary. So I don't.
Well, then apparently there's all shitheads in my timeline.
Okay. I don't know, including AOC. I mean, she was just like, nah, you know, I don't agree with solitary confinement and he shouldn't be sent there. I mean, my thing is, then shut
up. Well, I posted about it and just people, like my like the tweets at me, it was just overwhelmingly like, well, he deserves to be tortured for what he did. And it's like, this is disturbing on so many levels. Luckily for Manafort, he has privileges that, well, no one should be tortured. He'll be one of the few that can escape it because he seems to have friends in high places still.
Right. So he is basically going to remain in federal protection. But this move for him was going to be temporary anyways, right?
Yeah. So what happens is while facing state charges, a federal prisoner is moved, would typically be moved to Rikers in the New York case. And they'd be there for the arraignment and for the initial proceedings. They might stay there for the entire proceeding through the end of trial. That would probably be the more likely outcome, although it's possible they would be transferred back to federal custody while awaiting trial, because it could be months, years even, till that happens. In this case, though, Manafort didn't even go to Rikers, not even temporarily. He is being transferred to MCC, which it is definitely not like some kind of cakewalk there either. It's not going to be a pleasant stay for him anywhere, but it's not quite as terrifying as Rikers. And this was a strange move because it turns out that the DOJ had actually intervened.
Yeah, that's the weirdness.
To make sure that Manafort did not go to Rikers, that instead he was sent somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, what commentators were saying. This is highly unusual for the DOJ, for the Attorney General to get involved in something like this. But apparently they made the request, and the DOJ specifically made the request, citing themselves. I mean, this is somebody DOJ...
It was Rosen. It was a deputy attorney general.
Oh, okay.
Deputy assistant attorney general. Oh. Yeah, it was high level. So this is a clear sign that the DOJ is still behind Manafort and wants to support him, which means that Trump still wants to support him.
Trump can still pardon him too, right?
Trump can still pardon him, yep. Which is why there's these New York charges in the first place. Of course, that will set up another fight over double jeopardy, most likely. Although, given the recent Supreme Court decision on this front, he probably would not succeed.
Mm. Oh, when? What is that decision?
Last week came out, or even this week. But it was a recent decision that's basically upheld the right for dual sovereignty, which means basically preserved the extent of the existing right to charge someone federally and then charge them under state law.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, I guess that's not good news for Manafort. But either way, I think they made this request, and the... Cyrus Vance is the ASA out there, right? What I read was that when DOJ made the request not to have him sent there, he was like, well, there were no plans to send him to Rikers specifically or put him in solitary specifically anyway. So they kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever. That was a response from New York.
Well, the DA, I mean, so he, Manafort would have been put in solitary for his own protection. Mm. I mean,
that makes sense. Yeah.
At least that. But the standard would have been for him to go to Rikers. So that there's no reason they would have done it differently in this case, except for the federal intervention.
All right, so we want to talk a little bit about or follow up on a story this has kind of been ongoing for a while now, and that is how this administration is basically kind of directing the military to not accept transgender members. And recently, apparently Trump gave an interview to a British, you know, pundit, to Piers Morgan, and he said some things that are kind of alarming.
Well, not alarming so much as, I mean, just shows the emptiness of this whole move by Trump. Now, this was like, what, 2017, I think. I don't know if any of y'all remember the tweets from Trump about it when he announced his transgender troop ban. But I remember, like, I was online that day when it came out. I remember seeing his, like, series of tweets. And the first one, which got cut off, was talking about how his quote was, after consultation with my generals, military experts, please be advised the United States government will not dot, dot, dot. And then you're like waiting for the next tweet. You're like, okay, are we going to war now? Is that what this means? Is this what you're setting up? And he finishes his tweet storm and he says that they will not allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. And he claimed that this was because the military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Now, this was not actually, surprise, surprise, something that was undertaken in consultation with the military experts and generals. It caught them by surprise. It took a long time to implement, in part because they were caught by surprise, weren't ready to implement it, and also because there were lots of lawsuits that were filed blocking it. And Mattis, for a while, was taking it under advisement so that he could review and issue some kind of guidance about it. Now, initially, the lawsuits were successful. They were not resolved in the merits. It was just early stage litigation. But there were injunctions issued that stopped this ban from going into effect. And it went up to the Supreme Court. And a couple months ago, they issued a ruling. Well, so in the early filings, the DOJ took a position that the DOD is, quote, still studying the issue and urged, like, deference to the findings of the DOD, basically punting on the issue, saying, like, they should be able to resolve this on their own. No need for the courts to get involved in it. What is paramount importance is permitting the Secretary of Defense to implement the policy that, in his judgment, after consultation with experts, best serves military interest. So they weren't really taking a position on the transgender ban itself, just saying the courts should stay out of it. The courts did not stay out of it. Instead, one of the courts that heard one of the early injunction requests said that the challengers were likely to prevail in asserting that the president's order violates equal protection guarantees in the Constitution, as well as the rights of service members to medical care. Quote, a capricious, arbitrary, and unqualified tweet of new policy does not trump a methodical and systematic review by military stakeholders qualified to understand the ramifications of policy changes. So the ban did not go into effect until January, when SCOTUS lifted the injunctions and said, kicked it back to the lower courts to hear these cases on the merits, but strongly implied that if and when it came back to them on the merits, they were going to back Trump's ban.
Right.
The only good news was that Trump had requested expedited relief, which would mean that the Supreme Court would be the one to hear it very quickly, as opposed to years from now. And the Supreme Court said, no, you still have to do it the normal way. You still have to go through the process like everyone else. So yeah, now the ban has gone into effect. What it means is that no one, except for people who were grandfathered in under it and were able to get their status recorded before the ban, are no longer allowed to serve. If they are caught, they are removed from the military. They cannot join the military. Yeah. And this is something that Trump apparently came up with on his own in a tweet, probably to satisfy his evangelical base. It was definitely not something that the military was asking for. And it wasn't part of his campaigning. He tried to campaign as being, like, you know, pro-gay candidate. And some of his supporters even embraced him in that. They're like, oh, look, he's not actually against the gays.
Right.
Well, in rhetoric, not so much. In actions, yeah, very much so. In the Piers Morgan interview, he was asked about this. And this is what Trump had to say about why he implemented the ban.
I just wanted to ask you about your military. Is this week you tweeted your support for the LGBT community around the world where they're being persecuted or excluded.
It's terrible.
Which does prompt the obvious question. If you feel that protective of the LGBT community, why did you feel the need to ban transgender people from serving in the U.S. military?
Because they take massive amounts of drugs. They have to. And also, and you're not allowed to take drugs. You know, in the military, you're not allowed to take any drugs. You take an aspirin. And they have to after the operation. They have to. They have no choice. They have to. And that you would actually have to break rules and regulations in order to have that.
But the cost of the medication is minuscule compared to the overall budget,
yeah,
right?
You
accept that.
You also
the U.S. military spends a lot more money, for example, on giving Viagra to service men and women, or service men. Than it does actually on medical bills for transgender people. Yeah. And so it just seems to me an unnecessary thing for a guy who wants to be supportive of LGBT rights and the community around the world, that you've taken this action.
Well, it is what it is. Look, massive amounts, and also people were going in and then asking for the operation. And the operation is $200,000, $250,000. And getting the operation, the recovery period is long, and they have to take large amounts of drugs after that, for whatever reason, but large amounts. And that's not the way it is. I mean, you can't do that. So I said, yeah, when it came time to make a decision on that, and because of the drugs, and also because of the cost of the operation,
transgender people in the U.S. military have won serious gallantry awards.
Yeah.
What do you feel about?
Well, I'm proud of them. I'm proud of them. I think it's great. But you have to have a standard, and you have to stick by that standard. And we have a great military, and I want to keep it that way. And maybe they'd be phenomenal. I think they probably would be. But again, you have very strict rules and regulations on drugs and prescription drugs and all of these different things, and they blow it out of the water.
Too many drugs, too much cost.
Yeah. So this is nonsensical. His claim that this is why he did it has zero factual or rational basis whatsoever. I'm sure it'll get quoted in later filings about this case, because the DOD was forced to issue a statement contradicting the president almost immediately. A DOD spokeswoman issued a statement saying that, in fact, the military health system does cover all medically necessary treatments. And if a service member has a hormone deficiency for any reason, they can prescribe hormones. There's no ban on drugs. There's no like rule that military service members can't have drugs. Yeah, Trump is just trying to avoid making explicit what is obvious. This is basically pure anti-transgender animus that's motivating him. He wants to ban people that cultural conservatives are not okay with. And there is no cost justification despite his attempts to portray it that way. It's interesting, at least, that Trump felt like he couldn't say the words, "I don't like transgender people."
Well,
or,
I mean,
I don't think that. Yeah.
Come on, Susan. I mean, like, didn't you see ICE's, like, lovely
photo shoot? Oh, everyone knows he feels that way.
Did you see the ICE photo shoot from inside the transgender detention facilities? Oh,
no.
It was quite a thing this week. You got to check those out. I mean, this is how much they love transgender people. They're like, look, we have a whole transgender wing of detention for immigrants that ICE has. They did a media tour. It was horrific. I mean, they tweeted it out. ICE tweets out these pictures like it's like a photo shoot at a summer camp. These people are like, I mean, they look like they are incarcerated as criminals. There's barbed wire, and they're showing it. They're like, look, they're comfortable. They've got fans. They do arts and crafts. We love the transgenders.
And this is what they're willing to show. So, like, what's it like in reality?
Yeah.
So, yeah. The case is still ongoing. I don't have high hopes for it. I think that this is probably one that Supreme Court's going to back Trump on. But we now live in this weird twilight zone where the president's issuing orders based purely on cultural issues, claiming they have a pragmatic rationale behind them. And now the DOJ is left to try and litigate it.
You know, what's interesting to me is the fact that what I wonder about is that, I mean, he's obviously, I mean, he has to think about 2020. He's obviously, obsessed with polls and stuff. And these moves, they will make a certain segment of his base happy, the evangelical segment of it. But I do think that there's a lot of Republicans who would probably not be happy with this. I mean, there was bipartisan support for marriage equality in many ways. Like this, people have shifted on this issue, even in the right. And so I wonder if this issue starts polling badly, if that would change for him.
Yeah, well, it has been, and it hasn't changed the form, unfortunately. But the interesting thing is that since 2017, there has been a market increase in GOP support for having transgender troops. In 2017, it was polling at about 37% were in favor of it. And now we're at nearly half at 47%, which is in 2 years, that's a very strong, it's a dramatic increase.
It's a
10% which suggests
jump.
that democratically, this is definitely Trump's ban is not the direction we're heading in. The problem is that the ban will remain in place until Trump is out, most likely.
Which will probably be never.
He has his way. But yeah, I don't think Trump's going to get any boost like he expected in the polls or from his base for this ban. He's been hampered by so much litigation as a result and so much bad PR. So in this case, although it's backfiring on Trump, unfortunately it comes at the cost of all the transgender service members who are now the victims of the policy.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Okay, so I guess that's it for us for this week. I'm sure, well, I don't know about you, but I will probably periodically tune into the crazy shit that's about to go down in Orlando tonight. I know it's going to be nuts. I hope alligators appear out of nowhere. Just out of nowhere. Just go on a rampage.
Like, anyway. What's the over-under on how many Florida mans make an appearance at this rally?
Oh, God. Yeah, I was watching the t-shirts, the line of all kinds of hairy, crazy t-shirts walking in. People with their folding chairs and umbrellas, and yeah.
At least the QAnon supporters are largely gone. I haven't seen one of those in the wild in a while yet.
Oh, girl.
Maybe tonight.
They'll be there. They'll be there. This is part of some prophecy. I just don't know which one. all right. Okay. Well, thanks so much for updating us all on what's going on, and we will talk about this rally hopefully next week, unless there is another wave of news that makes it irrelevant by next week. We'll see what happens. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in this week. We'll be back in 7 days. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.